Hi, it's Bill Resnick here. Robert Naiman, welcome to KBOO.
Good to be with you.
Robert Naiman is the policy director of the website Just Foreign Policy. He's also the president of the web magazine board of directors. It's the name of the magazine. It's Truthout. Last week, Robert, the premier of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, extended his time in office. It was a national election. The polls were actually running against him. He got really desperate. It did give him an edge, what he did, enough to win. But what he did undermined Israel's position in the world and among Israel's supporters in the United States. Robert Naiman, we'll conclude discussing what can be done in the U.S. To gain some measure of justice for the Palestinians. But first, remind us about what happened last week and its implications.
Well, there were two major developments in the closing days of the campaign in terms of Netanyahu's positions. One was his announcement that he would not support the creation of an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza. In fact, he said, so long as I'm prime minister, this will not happen. That's a huge deal because the creation of an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza has been the goal of international diplomacy to resolve the Israel-Palestine conflict for the past 20 years and more. And so Netanyahu was reversing his previous position, the Israeli government's position, and directly attacking the position of the U.S. government, longstanding position of the U.S. government, bipartisan, and the international community, which has put forward this as the solution to the Israel-Palestine conflict. So Netanyahu is saying, forget about a diplomatic resolution of the Israel-Palestine conflict, so long as I'm prime minister of Israel. That's throwing the gauntlet down in front of the United States and the international community, but particularly the U.S., because the U.S. is the main international backer of the Israeli government. The second thing that Netanyahu did in the closing days of the campaign was make a racially charged appeal for the right wing to turn out to vote for him, because he threatened that Arabs are going to vote in droves, being bussed by the left. The New York Times editorial referred to this as Netanyahu's racist rant. And the main opposition Labor Party also denounced Netanyahu's last-minute appeal for the right-wing vote, you know, given the threat of Arab voters, as he put it, also denounced it as racist. So these are the two things that the U.S. government and the world were left wrestling with in the wake of the election. Netanyahu's rejection of the two-state solution, which is the cornerstone of international diplomacy to resolve the conflict, and Netanyahu's attack on the Palestinian citizens of Israel, treating them as essentially a threat to Israeli security by the act of voting.
Robert Naiman, it seems to me that sort of puts a new light and forces examination by people who didn't want to look at it and didn't want to examine it, the Israeli policy in the West Bank and Gaza, that a lot of us said is basically a slow strangulation, a ethnic cleansing by dispossession and by hunger and by humiliation, somehow trying to force the Palestinians into smaller and smaller enclaves, or whatever you want to, bantustans is, the analogy, to South Africa. Is that happening? Sort of, I think among popular audiences it is, actually. There's lots and lots of the Jewish peace movement in the United States, Jewish Voice for Peace, for example, has its fears confirmed and is winning over more support.
Yes. Well, I think the key thing to recognize is that, you know, the key part of the comparison to South Africa is that you have this huge population of Palestinians in the West Bank who are subject to Israeli rule, but are not allowed to vote for the government that rules them. And it's been the case for years that liberals, both in the U.S. and in Israel, concerned about the direction of Israel, which Israel was going, away from peace, away from a diplomatic settlement, warned that there was a danger that the status quo path was towards apartheid. This is a commonplace. Now that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has openly said that he will not permit a diplomatic resolution of the conflict, will not permit Palestinians in the West Bank to win their goal of an independent state, you have to, it raises the question, all along this liberal critique was saying there's a danger of apartheid. If we continue down the current course, there is a danger of apartheid. The except for being polite, the intellectual excuse for not saying this is apartheid already was the belief or the hope that the status quo was a temporary state. If the status quo becomes permanent, that would be apartheid. That's what we want to avoid, the status quo going from temporary to permanent. That's why we would need a resolution. Well, what Netanyahu was saying when he said there will be no Palestinian state in my watch, he's saying the status quo is permanent. This isn't temporary. This is permanent. This is how it's going to be forever, or at least as long as I'm prime minister, which seems to be going on forever. So this is why, this is the reason that Netanyahu's action is issuing such a sharp challenge. Because as you said, it's forcing people to confront this uncomfortable fact that you have this huge group of human beings subject to the rule of the Israeli government, but they have no say. They're not allowed to vote for the Israeli government.
Yeah,
that's a fundamental. And they're subject to Israeli law, but they don't vote for the government that produces that law.
Yeah, well, and also Israeli law is, especially on the West Bank, just permits constant dispossession and taking of land and setting up more sites of humiliation conflict on the West Bank. Also, accepting what the settlers are doing is just ripping up the Palestinian olive groves and all of the rest of it, intimidating villagers, taking their water. Everything seems, and it's the military who sort of runs the West Bank, not even the Israeli courts, who sometimes make a decision in favor of Palestinian rights, rarely. Let's switch gears. This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Robert Nayman, who is the policy director of the website Just Foreign Policy, writes a lot on the Middle East. Robert, it seems to me what's going on now, this drama in Israel-Palestine, is part of a much larger drama where Netanyahu, with the forces of the right, particularly led by Netanyahu now in Israel, who is through his sort of racist and racism and rejection of the two-state solution, has now become the hero of the whole right. There were further right parties in Israel who were siphoning votes off for him. Now he's got a right-wing coalition, that's for sure. But where Netanyahu and basically the conservatives and Republicans and sort of military kinds of interests in the United States, although the military is smarter, it's complex. The military-industrial complex loves the conflict. All of those interests are... And in the United States are fighting for control of U.S. foreign policy and sort of the way of that the U.S. and Europe try to run the Middle East or at least influence and shape the Middle East for their purposes. Tell us about that.
Well, clearly there are overlapping interests. There is a powerful lobby in Washington that is advocating for higher and higher military budgets, Pentagon budget, even though supposedly there, you know, their deficit was a huge problem, and so there was a deal to the Budget Control Act that was supposed to restrain the deficit, but they made an exception for war spending. That's not subject to the caps of the Budget Control Act. Now the Republicans in both the House and the Senate are voting to increase the war budget, not actually for war, but to pad the Pentagon budget, the so-called base budget, that is supposed to prepare for war in the future. It's supposed to be going on all the time, military bases on the world, around the world, maintaining the size of the armed forces, the weapon system. All that is now being subsidized by this slush fund, the overseas contingency in operations account. This is the fact that this can happen is linked to the fact that there is so-called dark money, undisclosed campaign contributions that come from Pentagon contractors. You're not even allowed to know what is going on with the donations of, you know, Lockheed Martin, and which is manufactures the Boondoggle F-35 and these other weapons companies. So there is a tremendous pull towards increasing the Pentagon budget, even as domestic spending is cut. And of course, all fear-mongering helps that, whether it's fear-mongering about China, fear-mongering about Iran, that's all to the good. So there's a conflation of interests. There's an overlap of interest between the so-called pro-Israel lobby, really the pro-right-wing Israel lobby, the pro-Netanyahu lobby, and the lobby for increased Pentagon spending. And that's a dynamic that, you know, has been true for years, but it's getting, the lines are getting sharper in the sense that, you know, the recent developments we've seen is increasingly the Republican Party in Congress is trying to take ownership of this and say, you know, we are the party for supporting Israeli militarism. Don't support the Democrats. If you support Israeli militarism, support us. And they have part of their incentives for doing that is that there are people like Sheldon Adelson, the casino magnate, who are ready to drop huge amounts of cash on them to reward them for this hyper-militarism that they're promoting. We saw this with their invitation to Netanyahu to come speak to Congress, denouncing the multilateral diplomacy with Iran, this sort of 11th hour, oh my God, you're going to make a deal with Iran, when everybody has known for years what the outline of a deal would be. We saw this with the letter of the Tom Cotton letter of the 47 Senate Republicans to Iran, saying, you know, basically don't make a deal with Obama because we will undermine the deal. It's kind of unprecedented attack on ongoing diplomacy. Rand Paul, by the way, previously seen as an ally of people who wanted to prevent a war with Iran, signed the letter of the Tom Cotton 47. Rand Paul also co-sponsored the Corker-Menendez bill, which is the main Republican vehicle right now for trying to blow up diplomacy, saying that Congress has to have a veto over whatever an immediate veto over whatever deal the U.S. and Europe negotiate with Iran. So this is the shift that's taking place now in these dynamics, where the it's becoming the Republican Party party line that, you know, we have to support Netanyahu above all else. We have to blow up diplomacy with Iran. We have to prepare the ground for a war with Iran. That's a new dynamic.
Well, that's a happy scenario that we can all wake up with this morning and contemplate. Bill Resnick for the Old Mole. I'm talking to Robert Nayman, who's the policy director of Just Foreign Policy. It's a website. Robert, let's talk about what can be done, not so much on the Middle East, but in fact, it seems to me Israel and Israel policy and the way Israel operates is a real flashpoint and a way that those of us who would prefer a lot less killing and a lot more development and especially a lot more mobilization against the real war that we're fighting, which is the war against nature and stopping that one. It seems to me that Israel, that struggle is quite important. And that there's an a lot of international feeling and popular feeling here and sentiment and understandings for taking action to force Israel. It's really dependent on the U.S. in so many ways, vast amounts of military aid, which, of course, complicates things because the U.S. military loves the Israeli military. What can be done? I guess we have to do that fairly quickly, though.
Well, so here's the good news. I mean, as the Republicans and Netanyahu have been raising the ante for what they define as supporting Israel in terms of, you know, ever more militarism, you're seeing Democrats in opposite development, where Democrats are more willing than they've been in the past to take distance from Netanyahu, including President Obama, but also even Democrats in Congress, which was even historically harder. So we had 60 Democrats basically boycotting Netanyahu's speech to Congress, a couple dozen Democrats writing a letter saying that it should be postponed, maybe a couple dozen more who didn't go without announcing that they weren't going. So there is a new willingness of Democrats to support President Obama in opposing Netanyahu on some things.
Robert, we have less than a minute. You got to summarize.
So right now we have a petition on MoveOn with 20,000 signatures saying that Obama should follow through on his threat to lift the diplomatic shield from Netanyahu at the United Nations. This would be a very big step that would allow the UN Security Council to take the lead on pushing for a diplomatic settlement of the Israel-Palestine conflict.
Right, somewhat like the what happened in South Africa when boycotts and sanctions and other things forced the South African government to radically change its policies. I'm afraid I got the last word. Robert Nayman, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Good to be with you.
Right, so long.